HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy.
Mm-hmm. And I'm excited. It's coming to my house today.
It's coming to my house today, too. The doorbell might ring while we're recording.
Yeah, it's perfect because I had no plans this week because of the holidays and the store was closed yesterday. So I'm very excited. This box is coming to me.
With the groceries you need.
With the groceries I
need.
And
the meal ideas.
Yeah, and there's a 20-minute meal in there for me to make for dinner without having to like stress over what to make. So
yes, you can always just look forward to the HelloFresh delivery knowing that you don't have to worry, especially because we're recording yesterday was Easter.
Yeah.
No shopping yesterday.
Right.
Right.
Family dinners especially are fuss-free with they have a picky eater kid-tested and approved family plan, which is what
you,
I need.
How many picky eaters do you have in your house?
I have, well, there two are. One claims he's not, but he tends to be, he'll at least try stuff.
Okay. Well, that's better. At least he's trying things. Spend less time meal planning and grocery shopping each week and get that time back to do more of what you love, which is obviously knitting.
Obviously. And everything is pre-measured in handy labeled kits, so you know which ingredients go where, and you just grab that bag and make that meal. It's great.
I love it. Visit HelloFresh.com and use the coupon code VERYPINK30 for a discount on your first box when you subscribe.
Yep, you'll get $30 off your first week at HelloFresh.com.
Yeah, we'll have that link in the show notes. Welcome to the Very Pink Knits podcast, the companion podcast to the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel. I'm Stacy, and I'm here with Casey.
Hi there.
Casey is the media manager here at Very Pink, and she's also producing this show. If you'd like to get your knitting question on the show, please email it to podcast@verypink.com and be sure to tell us where you're from. And the show notes for this episode are available on my website. Just go to verypink.com and click the podcast tab at the top of the page, and you will see the links and photos and whatever we talk about under episode 92.
Yep.
Episode 92. And in episode 92, we are going to magically turn knitting questions into knitting answers, mm-hmm. as always. But you have an interview.
I do.
A very cool interview that you don't remember how you...
I keep a running list of things.
Of interesting topics that you want to get to, interviews mm-hmm. you want to get to, but then you go back to the list and you can't figure out.
Because like I read an article or whatever.
I see.
Or I got on some Google search and down some path. And so I'll just start bookmarking things.
Right. So what is this one?
So she's a professor at Vanderbilt University. Her name's Melissa Grisolfi. And she works in the Department of Teaching and Learning. So this kind of goes off our previous interview about math, using knitting as a way to teach math.
Right.
And so she's working on a project.
We should link to that episode in the show notes as well, because they kind of have something to do with each other.
Yeah.
But tell me what she's doing.
So her project is called Recrafting Mathematics Education, Designing Tangible Manipulatives Rooted in Traditional Female Crafts. And so they're using traditional crafts in textile, fiber, and needlework to help teach math concepts.
Okay. Let's listen. Mm-hmm.
Well, my name is Melissa Grisolfi, and I am an associate professor of mathematics education at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. And this project, basically all of my research is about the ways that we can reorganize experiences for kids so that they develop more productive mathematics identities. And the idea is that kids don't like math largely because of the way we teach math, and that if we thought about doing math differently, people would develop really different relationships with the discipline. And so it's very fun work, I have to say. And, you know, some of it looks is located in classrooms. So I have some research projects where we work on redesigning curricula or helping teachers. Teachers are always trying to get more problem solving into their classrooms and helping them sort of realize those problem-solving goals. And so that work happens in classrooms. And then I also have a collection of projects that thinks about what would math look like if it didn't look like school math. And that's where this Recrafting Mathematics Education project comes in. That's about exploring the mathematics of women's textile art and thinking about what that can tell us about what we might do with kids as they learn about mathematics.
So when you're saying kids, are you focused on a specific age group?
No. In general, I tend to work with with kids who are like between fourth and seventh grade. Mm-hmm. But not always. It kind of depends on the project. And the Recrafting Math project has actually worked a lot with adults because we're trying to understand what happens for more expert, experienced knitters. We've ended up thinking a lot about knitting. And then thinking about translating that work down to working with kids. And then we've run a series of camps. And those camps are usually open to kids who are sort of rising fourth graders through, you know, as old as they want to be. So that it usually tops out around like rising 10th graders.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about like where the idea came from and what it's looking like in the classroom.
Well, the idea came from a lot of places. So, you know, I've been working on trying to understand kids' math identity for a while now. And I knew that a lot of what we do in schools with all the good intentions that we have really ends up making some kids feel like they're quite bad at math. Mm-hmm. But in fact, the way we teach math in school doesn't resemble very much about the way math actually gets used in the real world. So teaching kids that they're bad at school math is actually like a double disservice because it actually convinces them that they can't do things outside of school math, even though it doesn't resemble school math at all. Like as an example, in school math, kids tend to learn that fast means smart, that if you're good at math, you can do things quickly. Right. But that's actually not the way that mathematics gets used in practically any discipline, right? And so, of course, we care about efficiency in general, but a lot of the time, the most interesting thinkers are not the fastest thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really wanted to try to think about how can we create some like lived examples for people about other versions of mathematical thinking that don't just look like school. So that was sort of one goal of the project. And then of course, it's easy to start to care about and focus in particular on girls when you do this work, because girls are sort of especially susceptible to messages about their own abilities in mathematics. And so we were really trying to think about spaces where girls really feel like they belong already and try to highlight the sophistication of what they're doing in those spaces. And this is not just my idea. You know, a lot of people, I think, have found a lot of power in going outside of school to where kids are doing really sophisticated things and then helping kids to notice and see the complexity of their thinking and then like use that as kind of a bridge to school.
Yeah.
So the textile part came in. So I have a co-principal investigator on this grant whose name is Kylie Pepler, who is a professor, an associate professor at Indiana University. And the specific idea of this grant about textile art just came in from like our shared interest in art. And Kylie's actually, her focus is on art. Her research focuses on art and creativity and came from our shared focus on design and craft. And, you know, we just started dreaming about, well, what would it look like if we just wrote a grant that actually let us play with some of the ideas we loved instead of doing something that, you know, maybe felt a little more formal? It really did just come in from our interest. And as we explored, yeah, I mean, that's the best kind of project. So then as we explored, is this a thing that anyone else would think was interesting? We realized, oh yeah, this is actually a really robust area.
Yeah.
Probably other people will care about it too. And it has turned out that lots of people have been really interested in this work. And in fact, we sent out a survey that about math and craft. We hope that 200 people will fill it out. Well, we finally closed the survey after 2,500 people had filled it out.
Oh my gosh.
So we were asking people about their crafting experience and whether they think craft involves mathematics and how and why, and tell us their design experiences. And people were so excited to talk about this. And we've since interviewed, I don't know, about 10% of that sample to try to get a little bit more depth and information about, and these are adults, but about adult knitters, crocheters, quilters, weavers, and people who sew in various ways, and try to understand their experience of the craft and their experience of using math in the craft. And I mean, 98% of our sample agreed that their craft involves mathematics.
Oh, of course.
Yes. Yeah. So it was really a thing. Well, but if you're not
a crafter.
Right. Exactly. Then you might not know that.
Yeah.
And so, it's just been a fun project, a really fun project.
So after you're done with this research, what do you think it's going to look like translating into a classroom scenario, or what's the outcome?
Well, that's an excellent question. That is the question of this coming academic year, actually, that we're working on with my team, because I think one of the challenges at translating work into schools is that schools are systems that have a tremendous number of constraints that don't on their surface have anything to do with what actually happens for kids learning, mm-hmm. but ultimately have tremendous implications for what can happen in the classroom. And so, you know, knitting, as an example, is a thing that takes a long time. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot less time to teach kids to knit than I thought. I thought that was going to be, you know, weeks, but in fact, we have found it's actually hours. It's about 3 hours we found it takes for kids to be able to knit, you know, with some independence, not mistake-free, because none of us knit mistake-free, but, you know, that they could start to understand and find, oh, I have too many stitches, you know, so with a little bit of independence. Well, 3 hours in math class is a lot of time.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to imagine how the work we've been doing in our out-of-school sessions, which we've called Knit Lab, would just whole cloth transfer to schools, unless the schools have a little bit of flexible space, which most public schools don't. They just don't have flexible time because of the number of the constraints that they're under. And so instead, what we're playing with this year is two things. One is whether or how we could connect with, there's often in schools, and particularly in Nashville, there's a program called STEAM, which is just STEM plus A for arts. Mm-hmm. And it's actually an elective that happens in schools. And one of the things we've started to wonder about is because the STEAM classes have fewer constraints in terms of testing and time, mm-hmm. could we start to explore kids problem solving, like create opportunities for kids to engage in problem solving and knitting, and then work with teachers to think about how they might bridge through some of that activity across some of those activities so that they don't have to have instructional time taken up by knitting, because right. they just don't have spare instructional time. So that's one thing we've been playing with. And the other thing we're playing with this year, well, this coming year, is to think about the practices that seem to sustain people's participation in knitting that we know to be mathematical. So for example, when we've been interviewing knitters, I mean, all of them without a doubt say, talk about the importance and the assumptions about making mistakes. In fact, my favorite quote from one of our knitters was, if you knit, then you unknit. And it's right.
It's,
I mean,
true.
It's true. You can even take classes about fixing mistakes, right? I mean,
right.
It's just such an assumed part of the craft. Well, it turns out that, like, that's a great example of something that kids think, if they make mistakes in math, then they must be bad in math.
Right.
But in fact, that has nothing to do with math, right? I mean, mathematical problem solving must involve making mistakes, because the whole point of problem solving is trying to figure out what is the question asking and how can I answer it. And it is the rare person who can do all of that error free, and no one actually would expect that you would.
Right. And there's different ways to go about it too.
Right.
Which is something that you're not taught when you're taught to hurry up and finish this whole sheet of math multiplication tables.
Exactly. And in fact, that was a second thing that all of our knitters talked about was they, you know, we asked knitters to describe, well, how do you find an expert? Or how do you recognize expertise in knitting? And people all resist answering that question. And, you know, so then, of course, we just ask it in different ways. And what I've come to understand is that the reason that that question is so hard for people to answer is because there's such an assumption in the knitting community that there isn't only one right way to do things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some kinds of forms of expertise that you can, I can't remember what it's called, like where you can take all these different classes and get kind of certified. But even that becomes this point of great contention amongst knitters about, you know, why should it have to be that way?
Right.
And, you know, there's so much invention in knitting as people discover new ways to have particular effects or new ways to cast on. And that notion that there isn't only one right way to get to an answer is another just absolutely endemic practice in knitting that would be so productive mm-hmm. when translated into mathematical problem solving. And so that's the other area that we're working at on this coming year is if those are easy to think about how to get into the classroom in other kinds of design projects that don't have the same kind of lead time as knitting does. Mm-hmm. So we're both thinking about taking the task of knitting and thinking how we can integrate that as a form of mathematical problem solving. And then some of the practices that are involved in knitting and think about how to transform those into the classroom.
That's so cool. I love this. The fourth grader in me would have loved to do this instead.
Well, I cannot tell you how many women have told us, and we've not by design, but just how it's happened. We've only interviewed women, but how many women have told us that they understand mathematics so differently mm-hmm. now that they think mathematically through their craft.
Absolutely.
And this includes women who are like programmers or women who are engineers. I mean, a lot of the women we interviewed are actually using mathematics in their professional lives, and they still see craft as reorganizing their understanding of the discipline.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. And I mean, there's the tactile piece of it, you know, I'm sure
yes.
that it versus programming in a computer versus programming on a sweater.
Exactly. Well, and you know, people talk about this too. They talk about how they won't call it expertise, but they all talk about this as an indication they knew for themselves that they were getting better. People will tell us that, well, how did you know you were getting better? And one of the things that almost everyone says is, in some way or another, I was better able to read my knitting.
Mm-hmm.
It was, and you know, that, and that is kind of the text, the feedback of the fiber, right? It's like something's bumpy where it's supposed to be smooth, or what is that hole doing there, or the fabric's pulling in a way I didn't want it to pull. And it's really an added resource for sure in supporting people's thinking.
Yeah. Well, this is fabulous. I'm super excited for your work.
Thank you. It is a very fun project.
So what is your timing on this? Do you think is there going to be an end time?
What will happen next is, so when this grant will end at the end of the, it will end in summer of 2019. So one more year we have. And I think the next step is to really think about design work with kids. So whereas this project really intended to start with adults and has spent a lot of time with adults, my research is really about kids thinking. Mm-hmm. And so we're really interested in the ways that design and play and tinkering, which are all elements of knitting and elements of other kinds of arts, can connect to mathematical thinking to kind of reformulate the ways that kids start to think about what counts as mathematics.
Well, I can't wait to see what comes out of this.
Well, thank you. We are actually trying to write. I get requests all the time for my curriculum, and I don't have a curriculum. Because almost always what we're doing with kids is we give them what we call design challenges, which are just sufficient constraints to like help them plan to do something. But we don't tell them to do anything because it's in the design work that most of the mathematical thinking comes out.
Uh-huh.
So we're working on a paper right now that I could at least send to people that's for a journal called Mathematics Teaching in the Middle School, where we can help people start to think about like, well, what makes a good design challenge? And
yeah.
like, you know, how does that support kids' attunement to like, for example, you think about ratio when you're thinking about gauge or, you know,
mm-hmm.
so we've been trying to do that paper, but I wish I had a curriculum, but I don't.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your time. I really enjoyed this.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm always so excited to talk about this work.
Thank you, Casey. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
I wish I had that when I was learning math.
I know.
Because I already knew the knitting part.
Well, it just makes it so much more. Anytime they can make something tangible, I think it makes such a difference.
For sure. For sure.
Super interesting.
Okay. Well, let's get into the knitting questions.
Okay. Hi, Stacey and Casey. I've been listening to the podcast for a while now. Thank you so much for doing this Q&A. It's so different from almost every other knitting podcast, and it's so refreshing.
That's nice. We know it's different.
That was the plan.
That was totally by design.
My question is this. I'm a very tight knitter. I've known this for a long time, but I've had a couple other knitters tell me I knit too tightly. I'm suddenly very self-conscious about it and curious, how tight are your stitches supposed to be when they're on your needles? Another knitter told me I should be able to easily slide my stitches across my needles with absolutely no resistance, and I shouldn't be tugging my working yarn to snug a stitch after it's been made. But when I looked at her fabric, it looked open and gaped, which I did not like. I like my closed fabric as long as it isn't cardboard. Should I work on loosening it up? Thank you for taking the time. Tamara from Treasure Valley, Ohio.
Idaho.
Oh, sorry, Idaho.
Just a lot of vowels. Have you heard of Treasure Valley, Idaho before?
No.
Sounds like a nice place.
It sounds like a amusement park.
It does. Okay. Tamara's question is, what is too tight for a knitter? And ultimately, if you are able to get gauge and follow a pattern, you're good. I mean, I usually want to have the philosophy that the way a person knits is their own thing. And so we try to make the world work with them so that they can keep knitting the way that they're knitting. But there are times where I think sometimes stepping in will actually help that person have a better time with their knitting. And if she's having a tough time sliding stitches on the needles, that's usually where I say, this is too tight. You know, this, all of these stitches, I usually call them angry. They're angry stitches. You can't slide them on the needle. And that's not really like the flow of knitting if you're fighting with them to slide them around. And so I would say, if you're happy and you're getting gauge and you're comfortable, that's fine. But if you are fighting with stitches to slide them and that's bugging you, you might want to try loosening up. And I'll link to my videos called Help for Tight Knitters, which will help. It gives suggestions for different needle materials and different things you might be doing to make the stitches too tight. You know, there's something I've been thinking about, I guess, over the past few months, and that is my philosophy is to take the knitter as they come and try to make things work for the way that they knit. But it seems like more and more I'm encountering people who the way that they knit is causing more problems than it's fixing. Like, this is the craziest thing. All of my years of knitting, I've never heard of this before. But a woman emailed me and she said, I'm such a loose knitter. And I'm trying to make socks. And I'm following your sock pattern. And I started with the needle size you recommend. We're talking about fingering weight socks. Mm-hmm. I started with the needle size you recommend. And then that was, the gauge was way off. It was way too loose. So I kept going down needle sizes. She's on 000 and her gauge is still too loose. So, I mean, I told her, I was totally honest with her. It's like, I've never heard this before. And I try not to tell people, you need to change the way you knit to be more uniform with the rest of the knitters in the world. But she needs to change the way she knits to be more uniform. There's no needle
you
size.
You can't go any further. Yeah.
So she can't knit socks until she changes the way she knits a little bit. It's crazy, huh?
Yeah, that is crazy.
And then sometimes you run into people like, I haven't run into a lot of mirror knitters, but you remember from our knitting group, there was one mirror knitter in there. I haven't run into a lot of them. I would say I can count them all in one hand, like people I've actually taught in person who are mirror knitters. But a lot of times mirror knitters have to completely turn any pattern they're working around so that it is worked mirror image so that it ends up coming out the right way. And like, of course, people want to knit the way that they want to knit. But if someone's, you know, like a kid and they're just learning, I might encourage them to turn that around just so that they don't have a lifetime of rewriting every pattern they work.
Yeah.
But if, you know, some left-handed knitters really feel way more comfortable with mirror knitting than just continental knitting.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I worry about this tight knitter when she's trying to do like lace stitches or knitting two together. If it's super tight, that's going to be hard.
To get your needle into the next row.
Yeah. And eventually her hands and shoulders might not like it.
You know, that's another thing I didn't think about is if you're a really tight knitter, a lot of times your whole body is really tense and you can actually hurt yourself.
Yeah.
Just the repetitive motion of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say if Tamara's getting gauge and she's not hurting herself, and we can link to the chiropractic episode in the show notes. She's not hurting herself. She's getting gauge. I always say, you know, go with it and do your thing.
Yeah.
And she's had a couple other knitters tell her that she knits too tightly.
Well, and
don't listen to other people, first of all.
But if you're pulling at it to get it off the needle and you're going to be, I just wonder eventually, like, will your stitches get messed up because they're so tight that when you pull it, it's going to do something. I don't know.
If you're shoving them across the needle to get them moved along, and you're using maybe kind of a delicate yarn, you could potentially hurt the delicate stitches.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we answered her question. Yeah. I went way beyond answering her question.
Okay. We have two questions. I apologize if they've been asked already. Number one, can you only use German short rows for socks when you're knitting them toe up, or can you use them cuffed down?
Okay. This is from Marissa in California. No, they work either way, German short rows are just a way to turn the work in the middle of the row, when you haven't worked all the way across the row or to the end of the round, to turn the work and work a short row, usually as a substitute for wraps and turns. But nope, they work either direction, toe up or cuff down.
And question two, is there a way to convert your sock patterns that are not written with instructions for GSRs to be able to use them? For instance, in either your Learn to Knit Toe Up Magic Loop socks or Two at a Time Magic Loop, those are written not using GSRs, and I'd like to be able to use them instead. As always, Stacey, thank you for your awesome videos, giveaways, and podcasts. You are my go-to for all things knitting, and I've become an improved and more confident knitter because of you. Casey, thank you for the interviews you've given us on the podcast and for what you share on Instagram. I love following your pictures there.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. And her second question is there a way to convert your sock patterns that are written using wraps and turns into German short rows? And yes, there are, and I absolutely have a video on that. It's just a short technique video called German short rows, and I'll link to it in the show notes. And it actually shows you how to work German short rows and talks about using them when a pattern calls for traditional wraps and turns.
Mm-hmm. So I think I've done that.
Yeah. I think, did you do it on my bulky sleep socks
pattern?
Maybe.
I can't remember.
Do you mind wraps and turns?
No.
No, I don't either. I mean, there are people, like the things that I get the most that people really dislike, purling,
yeah,
wraps and turns, double pointed needles.
Yeah.
Like people email me all the time, like, not usually one thing, one of those three things at a time. Like, how can I go through the rest of my life without ever doing one of these things?
Without purling.
Yes.
You just have to make everything in a tube.
There is a book.
Or garter stitch.
There is a book that is like the knit stitch only.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. It's like a famous, well, we'll find it.
Yeah.
We'll link to it in the show notes.
Wow.
I think it might be called The Knit Stitch. It's a whole book of patterns with no purling.
I guess a lot of garter stitch.
Okay, that is all we have time for this week. Casey, okay. If people want to find you online?
My website is kcknits.com, the letter K and the letter C.
And all your social media buttons are there. And as Marissa in California noticed, you take great Instagram photos.
I try.
You're doing a good job.
Thanks.
And if you want to find me online, my YouTube channel is Very Pink Knits. And I also have a website, verypink.com, and all of my social media buttons are on the bottom of that page. So this is all for this week. So until next week, stay warm, my friends.